There's a very common sense reason gold is pushing to all-time highs right now. Actually, there are several reasons. The cost of goods continues to rise despite interest rate controls by the Fed. Since Jan 21, the cost of living is up 17.9%. The national debt continues to skyrocket, now above $34 trillion, causing many to worry when the House of Cards will come crashing down. A presidential election year that'll have massive implications on the future of this country. All of this adds up to instability and uncertainty, and that's why so many Americans are turning to Birch Gold Group. Have you diversified your savings yet? Secure a portion of them with gold from Birch Gold. Text STRANGE to 989898 and get your free info kit. You'll learn how to convert an existing IRA or 401k into a tax-sheltered IRA in gold, and it doesn't cost you a penny out of pocket. With an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau and tens of thousands of happy customers, you can count on Birch Gold, too. Just text STRANGE to 989898 to claim your free info kit and to protect your savings from uncertainty today. In a world where uncertainty reigns supreme, where shadows of chaos dance at every turn, one truth emerges unyielding. Preparation is not a luxury, but a lifeline. Behold the Wellness Company, a beacon of readiness amidst the tempestuous seas of fate. Envision a sanctuary of tranquility, where the tumult of unforeseen medical crises finds no purchase. The Wellness Company's medical emergency kit stands as a bastion of assurance, a fortress of resilience against the unseen foes of health. Within its sacred confines lie the tools of salvation. Ivermectin, to ward off the insidious whispers of disease. Emergency antibiotics, to quell the raging storms of infection. Antivirals, to vanquish the relentless tides of contagion, and more. The Wellness Company Medical Emergency Kit is not merely a collection of supplies, it is the embodiment of preparedness itself. Crafted by the hands of esteemed healers led by luminaries such as Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. James Thorpe, Dr. Harvey Risch, and Dr. Drew Pinsky, this kit stands as the pinnacle of safety, the zenith of prevention. These truth-seeking doctors have forged a testament to vigilance, a testament to the unwavering pursuit of well-being. Embrace the certainty that comes from being armed against adversity. Embrace the Wellness Company, for in its embrace lies the promise of resilience, the promise of a brighter tomorrow amidst the chaos of today. Don't wait for the next crisis to strike. Visit twc.health/strangeplanet and use promo code STRANGEPLANET for an exclusive 10% discount. Prepare today and rest easy tomorrow.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett.
On this episode, a longtime investigator of unsolved mysteries discusses the behavior and language of Bigfoot.
They have the ability to do what we would normally call telepathy, but they call it mind speak in the Bigfoot circles. And so that's the preferred way that they like to communicate.
If you enjoy Conspiracy Unlimited, why not become a Conspiracy Unlimited Plus member? For just $1.99 per month, you'll gain access to two bonus, exclusive, commercial-free episodes per month, plus access to my back catalog of episodes. That's over 350 episodes. To subscribe, just go to conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com and click on Gain Access to Premium Episodes. Again, go to conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com and click on Get Access to Premium Episodes, or click on the link in the episode notes. Conspiracy Unlimited Plus for less than $2 per month. Why not sign up today?
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett. Pursuing the truth wherever it leads. Exposing evil and corruption and the secret machinations of powerful elites. Revealing the high strangeness beneath the surface of our supposed reality. Coming to you from his studio beneath the stairs, Richard Serrett.
Welcome to your Friday. Researcher, author Mary Joyce is here to discuss her new book, Bigfoot, Beyond the Footprints. Before that, I have a number of things to fill you in on. Let's start with Coast to Coast AM. I'm going to be hosting tomorrow, Saturday, May the 9th, and then Sunday, May 10th, and then again on Sunday, May 31st. And next Thursday, that's May 14th, all of the guest hosts, myself, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, Jimmy Church, Lisa Garr, Connie Willis, will all be joining George Norrie for one segment each. That's Thursday, May the 14th. So I'll be with George from 11:30 to 12 a.m. Pacific. 11:30 p.m. to 12 a.m. Pacific. Go to coasttocoastam.com for more information. You can also visit my events and appearances page at strangeplanet.ca. And speaking of the website, strangeplanet.ca, I've completely overhauled it and redesigned the website, strangeplanet.ca. It's so much easier to navigate. I think it looks absolutely fantastic. Everything is pretty much on one page. You just scroll down, strangeplanet.ca. And don't forget, while you're there, to register for my free monthly newsletter, Inner Sanctum. We hear so much about Bigfoot sightings, what they look like, attempts to identify their DNA from hair samples, etc. And Bigfoot trackers are forever making plaster casts of their footprints. But we don't hear so much about their behaviors, their family and social life, and their language. We'll be talking about precisely those things on this episode. Mary Joyce is the founder of SkyshipsOverCashiers.com, and her brand new book is Bigfoot, Beyond the Footprints. Mary Joyce, welcome back to Conspiracy Unlimited. How are you?
I'm fine. It's always good to hear from you.
I want to talk about your new book, brand new book, Bigfoot, Beyond the Footprints. And this focuses more on the human side of Bigfoot, less on the footprints and more on their social organization and so forth. Tell me about it.
Well, I got sick and tired of just reading about Bigfoot footprints and Bigfoot whacking a branch on a tree and making howls and throwing stones at people. And over the years, actually since 2010, we have done a lot of stories on Bigfoot, and I think we're well past 70. And there was so much information that I found, and it was presenting a total different side to Bigfoot than anything that we're seeing in most of the publications. They have families. They have made friends with some people, though they're very selective in who they want to be friendly with. They've helped and even rescued people in trouble. They have preferences. They have language. They have unique biology. There's just a lot more to them than what people think.
What about in North Carolina? Are there a lot of Bigfoot sightings?
Not a lot compared to the Rocky Mountains in the West. But yes, we do have them, and I live here in the mountains of western North Carolina, so I've been able to investigate some cases and been to a Bigfoot cave and seen the prints and heard them make their calls, and so I've seen a lot of things firsthand that I wouldn't be able to do if I lived in Flatland.
How are they organized? Are there multiple families that live together, or are they more solitary?
Everything that I have personally come across with is that they have family units, and that's what you usually see. It's typically a male, a female, and I've never heard of more than two kids at a time. Then there's evidence that they have a clan type thing, but they don't come together in large groups in any noticeable way. Four is the most that any of us have been aware of at one time. So there's indications there's more within a certain area.
And how long do the young typically stay with their parents?
I honestly do not know that answer. The Bigfoot apparently lived to be, much older than we humans. And the kids are with them from a very small size. And you also see families where they look like they're adolescents or teenagers. So they have an extended family life over many years.
And are they territorial?
Well, not in the sense that dogs go and pee on trees and mark their territory, but they live in regions. And I don't know if that is an answer to your question.
Well, for example, will they defend their territory from other Bigfoot intruders?
I don't know. I'm not aware of like clans of Bigfoot competing with each other. We've never seen any evidence of that. If we humans get too close, they will, in most cases, try to scare us away. And they will do that by making their sounds or by throwing stones, not at you directly, but around you. And they'll make their howls and they'll give off an odor, all just trying to keep you away from where they spend most of their time. But we have had, we have not had reports of people being attacked by it. However, at the very end of my book, I do include two stories where they have gotten violent. And in both cases, it involves hunters with guns who are trying to shoot them. And if somebody was trying to shoot me, I probably would not react well either.
What else have you learned about family life with Bigfoot?
Let me tell you what I think is a really cute story. There is a gal who lives in South Carolina who has had the ability to communicate with Bigfoot since she was a child. She is so good at it that she was invited to Siberia, and that's a whole nother story if you're interested in it, but because of her expertise. And she had a pony, and the pony would always get out. It would jump over the fence. It would bust the fence down. And so she finally resorted to getting a 250-foot long boat rope, and every night she would tie it up, go to bed, and in the morning the pony wouldn't be there. And it would be tied to trees in the woods, someplace in the woods around her house, always different places. And as the story continues, the water bucket and the feed bucket would be dragged out into the woods where the pony was. And then she noticed that there were like muddy handprints on the pony. And what made the story really cute was that she would find muddy little butt prints on the pony. So clearly the Bigfoot were taking their little ones for rides on the pony.
That's remarkable.
It sounds so human.
Let's talk about the language. You mentioned communication and language. I interviewed a gentleman from British Columbia. I believe his name was Brian Bland, who believed that Bigfoot were communicating with him using glyphs that were created out of twigs and branches sort of bent into symbols and shapes. Do you know anything about these glyphs how else are they communicating?
Okay, I would regard that as like teaching preschoolers the essence or the essential beginning of language. Like we see symbols and they learn the letters in first grade. Communication can go way beyond that. They have the ability to do what we would normally call telepathy, but they call it mind speak in the Bigfoot circles. And so that's the preferred way that they like to communicate. But they have a language all of their own, and you may be familiar with a man named Scott Nelson. He had 30 years experience as a linguistic cryptologist for the Navy. And so he was very familiar with figuring out codes and stuff in multiple languages. And he was able to get a recording of the Bigfoot. And in order to figure out their language, he had to slow it down. And when he would slow it down, he could actually hear different languages woven into the Bigfoot language. And some of it gets kind of, again, humorous. Let's see if I can remember what some of it was. There was one where there was a male and a female Bigfoot, and they seemed to be having a discussion like a marital couple. And the female says, "Are you talking to them?" And the male says, in very slow language, "No, I won't." It was like she was telling him to keep his mouth shut and not talk to the humans. But I found that kind of interesting. But they've been able to find pieces of language from different languages, some in Japanese. In fact, I don't have it off the top of my head, but in my book, I give the connection where somebody can actually listen to a tape recording of the Bigfoot, and it truly sounds like a samurai warrior talking, and there's just no doubt about it. And this particular man, Scott Nelson, had people that were familiar with other languages who were able to identify some of this. So they pick up our languages to some extent, but it's said so fast that we can't really understand it unless the tape is slowed down.
So how do you explain that? I don't know, are they mimicking the language or are they learning the language? How does that come about?
I think they're picking up and actually learning the significance of at least some of the things we say. For example, one was caught saying, and I'm going to say it phonetically, me, what, food, plen, food, which sounds like he wants food and he wants plenty of food. Me, what, food, plen, food. And that clearly sounds like English to me, kind of a pidgin type of English, but nevertheless English. So, yeah, I think they get real close to like campgrounds. Many of them seem to be drawn to people who are singing around campgrounds. They seem to like the music. I know that when we set up our first site where we wanted to put food out and we did a bunch of food experiments, playing a flute, one of the wooden flutes, was a way to get their attention and their curiosity. So we conducted what I call a food experiment for a while just to see what they like, what they didn't like, and that proved to be very interesting also.
Tell me a little bit more about that food experiment. What were your findings?
Actually, in the book, I have pictures of about maybe a dozen different kinds of vegetables and fruits that were put out for them, and I turn it into a quiz with the answers on another page. But I will tell you this, they absolutely love apples. But beyond testing them to see what they like to eat and what they don't like to eat, and when they don't like to eat something, they will try it and spit it out. So that gives you a pretty clear indication they don't like it. We also experimented with the kinds of containers we put the food in. And anything with a handle on it, like one of the things was a cooler for like a six-pack of beer, and they would tip it over, but they wouldn't put their hands in it. We put a basket out with a handle. Same thing. They would tip it over, but they wouldn't put their hands in it. We did put out a basket without a handle, and they actually picked that up and took it, and it was found, you know, down through one of the mountain laurel paths after they'd eaten all the food and they left the basket behind. But they must have some kind of bad experience where they've gotten their hand trapped in something. So we found that an interesting piece of behavior, really.
Did they leave anything behind, particularly DNA?
This is where I kind of failed. We got a hair sample, a very good hair sample, and we sent it off to a lab, and you have to know a little bit about Bigfoot DNA to fully appreciate this. The Bigfoot is the maternal side is human. The paternal side is some unknown primate that nobody has any record of. So in order to get proof that somebody is a Bigfoot, you have to have the paternal DNA, which only comes from nuclear DNA. Now, we sent off a hair sample. Our hair sample did not include any of the, the very base of the hair follicle. And so they couldn't get any of the nuclear DNA. So it just came back as human. So I learned from an expensive experiment that you better make sure you've got the nuclear DNA before you send off anything.
Did you have any sightings or any communication?
Why don't I tell you about the most involved story we've ever had with the Bigfoot? And it actually happened just about 5 years ago exactly. And to get to this place, you have to go between two mountain ridges, and there's a single lane road that follows a creek. When you get to the end of it, it opens up. There's two houses, a barn, and a pond. And the woman who owns the land, she had known that there were things in the forest or in the land around her, and she never had any trouble. Until one day, they decided to fix the dam that was creating the pond. And somebody was out there with a jackhammer. They went right through and busted a hole out, and all the water in the pond drained into this hole. After that, they had nothing but trouble with the Bigfoot. In hindsight, what had happened was they had flooded the cave that Bigfoot were living in, and they were pissed. And they started off by messing with the people's vehicles. And they would have handprints and stuff all over the car, and they finally figured out how to get in there. They got in, I believe they turned on the motor, but it, you know, didn't go anywhere. They had their handprints all over the inside of the car. As things continued, as the woman, Samantha, said, they kept upping their game. So the next thing is that they started trying to figure out how to get into the little house. And we have pictures of this in the book. I've got the handprints all over the door where they're trying to get in. Some of it, again, is kind of humorous. She went to town one day. She left the dryer running. And when she came home, there were handprints all over the dryer. They apparently had been seen the clothes spinning through the glass door, and that caught their attention. They upped their game again and moved into the big house, and that's where we really got some interesting things that happened. They didn't mess with the downstairs so much, but they did upstairs where the bedrooms were. And this is where we really began to see evidence that there were young Bigfoot, not just adults, because they started using markers from their children's rooms, and the kids were older, and they started drawing on the wall. It was all drawings beneath the light switch, which would indicate it, you know, it's not a likely position a Bigfoot would be in to do drawings on the wall. So I've included pictures of what they did, you know, with their wall art. They went into the bathroom. They squeezed out the toothpaste. They messed with everything. They tore apart the toilet, and everybody was very, very happy that they didn't know what the toilet was for. I've got pictures of that. I've got pictures of the claw marks. They had reached under a locked door to the teenager's room, and you can see these real deep gouges. Like, it reached under and tried to pull the door open. The family did move out of fear. And the day that I met with Samantha and two other people were with me, we were sitting on her porch hearing all the details of her story after we'd had a tour. And she was reflecting, and it was at that point she realized, or she expressed out loud, that she felt like when the jackhammer accident had happened, that that's when it all started. And she was really apologizing. She, you know, she was like saying out loud she would never have, you know, intentionally done that to him. That's where it becomes even more interesting, because it's like they heard what she had to say in some way or another, because they ended up making a little, almost like a basket made out of a piece of old burlap, and put several shiny objects in it and left it at the front door. And it was like a peace offering. And after that, they quit having troubles. So it was a very interesting episode, and makes a pretty good read.
That's remarkable. And that's in Bigfoot Beyond the Footprints, just published. Mary, how do people get a copy of the book?
It's available through Amazon.
Bigfoot Beyond the Footprints. You mentioned that some individuals are chosen by Bigfoot. They will communicate with them. What kind of person are Bigfoot willing to commune with and communicate with?
The people that I've met who've had that kind of interaction have been people who are, they're not dumb. I don't mean that in any way whatsoever, but they live simple lives. They live close to the earth. They are farmers, or they do their own gardening. There was one man who did an early retirement up here in the mountains because he had cancer and he had been in the military. And he got a piece of property here in the mountains with a big steep mountain behind him that was so steep that there's no civilization behind him. And one day he was hearing this noise, and he looked outside, and he could see the Bigfoot with a large heavy branch banging a tree. About a month later, he heard splashing in the creek. Now, there's no kids around where he lives because it's really off an old logging road. And then when he went toward it to find out what was going on, he heard this low, kind of a growling grunt kind of sound. The next thing he saw was he had a light by his garage, and at night he was on the porch overlooking this trail, and he saw a Bigfoot family cross across the road. Interesting aside, he saw this repeatedly. It was always the female first, then the male, and then the kids. This story evolved into a friendship with the man and the male Bigfoot, who he named Fred. And this man, because of his own battle with cancer, was organic gardening, and eventually the Bigfoot would come down and be with him when he was gardening. There would be telepathic type communication, and the man would share some of his produce from the garden with the Bigfoot family. So it evolved into a friendship. The gal that I told you the pony story with, or about, she again is someone who lives in the country and is kind of like a big lovable mother. That's pretty typical of the people that I see that are able to develop relationships with Bigfoot.
Bigfoot that are in different regions of the country. So, for example, we have the skunk ape in Florida. We have the Sasquatch of the Pacific Northwest. We have a different type in North Carolina, presumably. Do they have different character traits, or are they all sort of gentle giants?
I hear more of the violent stories out in the far west. There is a lot of variation between the Bigfoot that you might not expect. Some of them have, typically they have five digits just like humans do, but there are some that just have four. There are some that have six. Around here, I think the normal five is more common. The 6 foot, or six fingers, six toes, I've gotten reports of that and photos, again, that I include in the book, from the Olympic Project out in Washington. With David Ellis, who I think is one of the co-founders of that organization. And they are devoted to learning about Bigfoot in those particular mountains. The Bigfoot out there seem to be the biggest. We seem to be more in the area where most of the Bigfoot are medium size. The smallest ones are in Florida. But the, you know, the behaviors are somewhat similar. They can have different hair colors. They can have different skin colors. They can have different eye colors, so to put them all in one category is not correct.
More of my conversation with Mary Joyce when Conspiracy Unlimited returns. The discovery of carbon-60 is likely to be the most amazing chemistry discovery of the late 20th century. And my friends at C60evo.com are the world's number one manufacturer of C60. The safe, consumable form of pure C60 is called ESS60. And the mighty Aphrodite and I take a tablespoon every morning. ESS60 is the C60 formulation used in the famous 2012 original Paris study that showed ESS60 doubled the lifespan of rats. ESS60 from C60evo.com is raw C60 that's been produced, certified, and guaranteed for safe human consumption. ESS60 from C60evo.com is a powerful molecule that acts as a nano antioxidant to attract, stabilize, and neutralize free radicals. It's also known to have 172 times the antioxidant power of vitamin C, 172 times, which may be why people are feeling healthier on C60. All I know is the mighty Aphrodite and I are sleeping great, and we're both pain-free. To get your bottle of ESS60, go to the episode notes for this podcast and click on the C60evo.com link. Use the code RS1SPEC to get 5% off. RS1SPEC and get 5% off. It's time to start taking responsibility for your health. Time to support your immune system. Join the mighty Aphrodite and I. If you want more energy, mental clarity, and a great night's sleep, ESS60 from C60evo.com. Again, go to the episode notes and click on the C60evo.com link and use the promo code RS1SPEC to get 5% off.
If there's one thing money can't buy, it's sanity. Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett.
Mary Joyce, the author of Bigfoot, Beyond the Footprints, is here, and we're talking about Bigfoot habits, their family and social life, and their language. Any evidence that they are tool users?
They're quite nimble with their fingers, and what's coming to mind at this moment is around here you have to take your garbage to the dump. They don't come and pick it up. And one lady had hers tied up in a garbage bag on her back porch to take it to the dump the next morning. And when she went out there, the knot had been carefully untied. Now, no wild animal is going to do that. It's the same area where Bigfoot have been seen. And this house is isolated, so it's not very likely another human came along and dug through the woman's garbage. So they're very nimble with their hands. I don't get a whole lot of indications of tool use, but they seem to try to figure out our tools or our doors or, you know, how they can invade or how they can, I don't know. But you don't see a lot of stories about them using tools.
And what about their shelters? Do they build nests or do they actually bend branches over and make lean-tos and such?
Both. Now, caves are not always an option. They are an option in this area. And one of the men that has lived here all of his life, he lives at the top of a mountain ridge, and he took me out one day to where he knows the Bigfoot are. And we went up a single lane gravel road, got out of the car, and the cave was about a half mile away from the road. So I'm behind him, and he has a machete because that's how thick the undergrowth is. And when we first started walking toward the cave area, we heard this whistle that it sounded like a bird, but not really like a bird. And then in the direction of the caves, there was an answer with the same kind of, I don't know, different kind of whistle. And after that, everything got silent. And I kind of feel like one Bigfoot was warning the rest of them that there's some darn humans headed in their direction. We did see Bigfoot footprints at the same place that we heard the first whistle. So the cave, the biggest cave that I saw on that particular venture was about 5 feet tall and about 8 feet across. I got up close enough. I took pictures. I include them in the book. I was not brave enough to go into the cave.
I don't blame you. I want to ask you about the connection, possible connection between Bigfoot and UFOs. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't know. I'm getting mixed signals myself. The area where the Bigfoot are the same area where we're seeing lots of big UFOs and have since the beginning. And that was the reason we started our website, which is skyshipsovercashers.com. Cashers is a town, a mountaintop town here in western North Carolina. So we also have at least two known underground facilities in that area. We've seen, there have been witnesses who have seen small UFOs go into a lake near one of the underground facilities. We've seen UFOs hover over that facility. And probably a better answer to your question is there's a man in another part of the mountains who has Bigfoot living on his land. They moved onto his land after neighbors had their forest, had it logged and the land was cleared. And one night he heard them making a whole lot of noise, the Bigfoot, and he went out there with his video camera. And he saw the Bigfoot by the tree line looking up at the sky. And when he looked up, there was a gold-colored UFO that was rotating above where the Bigfoot are. So there are indications there is a connection. People have many theories. Some people believe that the Bigfoot are like, like workers on the ground for entities in the UFOs. That could be true. We have one story where a Bigfoot who was dying was just absolutely upset because he had been befriended by somebody, I believe, in the military, and then they implanted something into the Bigfoot. They did things to diminish his special abilities, and he was just not at all happy, and he expressed this to a woman that he trusted before he died. So it's possible that the entities on the ships are using the Bigfoot, perhaps even against their will.
I just want to touch briefly on a couple of other stories. And one of those has to do with a whistleblower who had top secret security clearance. And he had reported that the coronavirus was created in a BSL-4 lab in Canada. This is something that's familiar to many of my listeners. This was in Winnipeg, Manitoba. And the gentleman in question was then later visited by what he described as men in black or entities in black. Tell me about that.
Okay, the traditional story of men in black is they're dressed in black suits with a black hat, and they look like they're from the 1950s as far as the style of the style of clothing goes. And they're usually kind of robotic, and these men in black that approached this whistleblower were also rather robotic and very threatening, but they were dressed totally differently. They had on black cargo pants, black t-shirt. The male had a t-shirt that had a True Harbor hardware logo on his shirt, and the other one had a Manfred Mann logo on it. And the logos had an old look, but the shirts were brand new. They had thinly disguised threats because he was saying too much.
He asked them about where they were from, and they said something rather unusual.
None of us have been able to figure out what that means, including the man that was threatened. One of them said, "We are the Closet Sunrise." And to this date, none of us have been able to figure out what that means.
Oh, I thought perhaps he said Closest Sunrise. Maybe I misread that. The Closet Sunrise.
I believe it's Closet.
Interesting. That is rather enigmatic and cryptic, isn't it? They were warning him to stop talking about it, but where were those orders coming from?
That's not real clear, because they are identifying that they're being, you know, that this Closet Sunrise. It leaves a lot of questions in all of our minds, and I can't answer them for myself or for you guys either. I wish I could. That's when they left. They were in an old truck, and they drove off from his property, and then it just disappeared. So he was in a position where he would have been able to see if it, you know, where it went, but it just disappeared.
Did they look human?
Yes, but they looked like robots. You know, the men in black look human too, but there's this robotic look about them. They're unemotional. It's sometimes they talk like they're mechanically speaking memorized lines. So there's something that's just not quite right with them.
And he threatened them back, and there was no response, correct?
Right, right. Of course, I think he's a fool to have done that, but he did do it.
I also want to talk about this line of UFOs that people are seeing. You seem to have cracked the case on that one.
The last couple weeks of April, we kept getting reports about people seeing this long line of UFOs. One as close as Hendersonville, which is maybe 45 minutes to an hour from where I live, and they said it was flying low. And at that time, I didn't know anything about it, but of course, my job is to jump in and start investigating. And what I found was that Elon Musk has come up with a new type of satellite internet communication system, and he calls it Starlink. And on April 16th, or thereafter, they had launched 362 of what he calls mini satellites, and they are all in a line. And what's interesting is that that's not the end of his big plan, because he plans to launch 60 more as often as every 2 weeks this year. And the goal is to have 12,000 of these in the air before this year is over. And he even entertains the idea of later extending that number to 42,000. This is not pleasing the astronomers around the world. And a place down in Chile, we have a photo taken through their telescope, and it's, you can see the diagonal lines going across their vision field, and it's part of this Starlink system of Elon Musk. There's another picture that will be included again in this posting we'll put up next week. And in this same picture that was taken in southern Brazil, you can see the Starlink lines, and you can also see a meteorite, which gives you an idea of how bright these satellites are.
So these are in low orbit, and they will be used to deliver internet to any subscribers, I suppose.
That I don't know, but I would imagine that it's delegated to particular customers.
And would they be delivering 5G?
Probably.
That's kind of worrisome, isn't it?
It makes you wonder. And he applied for this application to do it, and it's he applied it as a non-geostationary orbit satellite system. It obviously got approved. So that was November 2016, and 4 years later, he's got at least 362 of those satellites in the air.
Skyshipsovercashiers.com. Skyshipsovercashiers.com. And the new book is Bigfoot Beyond Footprints, which is available at Amazon. And I'm guessing, is it also available on your website?
If people have any trouble getting it through Amazon, I will send out copies, and the way of contacting me is on the website. I, for the most part, have Amazon handle that.
Mary, always a delight speaking with you. Thank you so much.
You too.
Okay, before I dim the lights in my little studio beneath the stairs, I'll be back in a flash to tell you a little bit about an upcoming episode. Some of you men are members of the Dollar Shave Club, where you get your supply of razors in the mail. I always thought that was a great idea. Well, did you know there's also a soap club? The Hero Soap Company makes an amazing product that's delivered right to your house in a resealable pouch, so you can take this soap with you on the road, camping, hiking, anywhere. Hero Soap is absolutely chemical-free. It contains no dyes or fragrances. Hey, did you know many mainstream soaps contain parabens, which have been linked to breast cancer and male reproductive issues, according to the FDA? And Hero Soap is owned by veterans. And some of the proceeds from the sale of this wonderful product goes to get homeless veterans off the street. So you can feel clean and refreshed and feel good about yourself knowing you're helping veterans. Use the hassle-free monthly auto ship to save an additional 10% off and never run out of soap again. To order your Hero Soap, go to the episode notes for this podcast and click on the Hero Soap link. You're going to love this soap. Your showers will never be the same. Hero Soap. Let freedom clean. Coming up next time on Conspiracy Unlimited, the life and times of America's most powerful and nefarious Mason, Albert Pike.
His beliefs were such that, especially towards the Native Indians, they believed in equality, but he also believed the slavery in that it supported the economic side of the South, the agricultural side. So he must have been, right from the very start, a very tormented individual.
Until then, I'm Richard Serrett. So long for now.
A new Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com. Blow your mind. That is all for now. Oh, and remember to share and give a 5-star review, because we have huge egos and need love. We're like cats. We need constant petting.